When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 39. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on tension, tying it all together.
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
And I'm excited that, well, I'm sad that we're ending our whole piece on Ring Shout, but I'm excited to talk about all the things that we've been talking about over the last few weeks and figuring out how do you put it all together? You know, we've been talking about anticipation, subversion, movement, resolution, narrative, context. If you're writing, trying to write something as tense as Ring Shout, how do you decide which tools you're going to be using at which moment to make it work?
I'm laughing because there are so many disciplines that, you know, as a web cartoonist, I had to learn so many different disciplines. And in every last one of them, I found that I knew more things than I could track at once when I was trying to do a thing. And so for me, the answer is think about one thing, do it as best you can, and then come back and figure out where you made the mistakes in all of the other things and now try to do them.
Yeah, I mean, this has been such a fun module because we were able to cover so many different techniques, so many different types of things. And, you know, I think P.J. Lee Clark is really virtuosically demonstrating a lot of these techniques at once. And so one of the things that kind of take away from it is what you want to be doing is doing little bits of lots of different things, right? And I think this kind of goes back to what we were talking about last episode in terms of how to keep something from feeling super tropey, you know, is having that variation. You want to subvert a little bit here. You want to, like, you know, deny someone a resolution here. And then you want to, you know, complete the pattern here so that we're in the rhythm of the story and you're drawing us forward, right? This really ties to a lot of stuff we've said before. We're just framing it slightly differently in terms of try-fail cycles, yes, but, no, and, like, all of these kind of things that help move someone through the story, which we usually talk about in terms of plot, really are tension techniques, because tension is the thing that makes a reader excited to continue reading. That's when you get that page-turning effect. That's how you get the more, like, quote-unquote, transparent prose effect, or make something more, quote-unquote, commercial, right? I'm going to just keep saying quote-unquote around all these publishing terms. But, you know, tension is so much of what, like, drives the story, because you can get to the emotional core of the characters, you get to the core of the relationships, and you can set stakes in really efficient ways.
I love what you said about try-fail cycles, because one thing I've been thinking about for myself is, like, how to incorporate all of this. Because it's one thing to read it in somebody else's work, like you were saying, Howard. It's another thing to try to put it all in yours. And I was thinking, you know, if I broke my work down, a work I was doing, into a try-fail cycle, maybe these are all questions I could be asking myself at the end of that cycle. So it's like, okay, I'm trying. Like, what am I, and what are the characters anticipating in this try-fail cycle? What have I resolved at the last try-fail cycle? Where am I moving towards? You know, and sort of look for some of these moments of tension, because sort of as you were saying, the try and fail is a lot about the, like, the action, but not necessarily the tension. And so thinking about what's the tension that moves that action forward or that makes that action important might be a cool thing for me to think about, like, when I'm trying to figure out an outline Or if I've written something and I'm like, this doesn't seem very tense, how can I add more to it?
I love the try-fail cycle aspect of it, because try-fail cycles are one of those things structurally that you kind of want to know early on, because if you get them wrong, you have to do a whole lot of rewriting. I think about, you know, tying it all together, all of the techniques. I think about what do I need to do first in order to do the least amount of rewriting? And it's kind of an inverted pyramid. World building, for me, is the very first, especially with a historical, alt history piece like this. You get something wrong, oh my goodness, the amount of rewriting that has to go on. But the amount of history that your readers are actually seeing on the page is very small compared to things like dialect, dialogue, all of those other tension techniques we've been talking about. And so for me, tying it all together is an inverted pyramid. Start with the structural things that will make the biggest mess if I get them wrong, and finish with the structural things that are like the fine grit sandpaper.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. One way I think about how to apply what you're talking about and sort of what we were talking about earlier in terms of all these techniques is I often think of a novel as a layer cake, is the metaphor I use a lot, right? And not like a three-layer birthday cake, but like a millefeuille with like all these different elements. And one thing I want people to think about in terms of how to keep tension rolling forward, how to keep that momentum up, is if you're resolving one thread of tension, if you're coming to the end of a pattern, make sure you have another one set up that's going to carry them forward, right? So as you're resolving one, say it's resolving her arc of understanding what happened in the barn, then underneath that, you have the second arc of the broken sword. And so that's going to carry you forward. As one ends, there's already rolling forward tension and momentum on another plot line. Ideally, like two or three others, right? You know, this is partially why what we were talking about in one of our earlier episodes about contextual tension can be so useful, because the contextual tension is this ambient tension that pulls us through the whole book as we're trying to understand how does this tie into the real world history? How does this tie into the actual clan, into the history of Birth of the Nation and all of those things?
I also think I will say, like, as a very messy writer, I am not a great structural like planner. And so I think it's also maybe not a way to like fake your structure as you go. So I'm thinking about that opening scene where they're fighting, you know, let's say I was just like, I want to write a scene where the clan are monsters and somebody is fighting them. And I am going to figure out the rest once I get there. And so it's like the scene has ended. Okay. They fought them, you know. Then it's like, what is left unresolved on the stage? Like, what is left? And what's actually left is the next thing they do, which is the pieces. So thinking like, okay, well, now they've killed these things. They got to, you know, I assume get out of where they are. Okay, that needs to be resolved. They need to like take the bits of, you know, monster somewhere and do something with them.
Oh, and they got to steal some whiskey.
And they got to steal some. Well, I mean, there's always time to steal some whiskey. One of my life mottos. Not really. But then like by thinking about that, then it's like, okay, maybe that gets me to the next scene. Mm-hmm. And then I can figure out, okay, now I figured out where they take the pieces. Oh, I've thought of a new character. Maybe that character provides some new tension. Mm-hmm. Will it be a lot jankier and you're going to have to go, it's like a cake. You ever make those cakes where it didn't quite work out and then you just frost the heck out of it? You're like, yeah. No one will know.
If I just trim enough off of this, it'll be flat and round,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's all you need. So you may have to fix it in post. But I think sometimes for me, like I will often get stuck when I'm writing at transitions. And I think a lot of times it's because I haven't figured out where the tension is going.
Yeah.
And so it feels like you just ended a sentence with a really like heavy period. That is, sounds very odd. You just ended a sentence very definitively.
You want to get the flow going.
You know, let's keep that. And speaking of flow, should we take a break for things of the week?
Sure, while I get myself together.
This episode of Writing Excuses is sponsored in part by Acorns. Money can be a difficult topic for writers and creative professionals. It's not like earning a regular paycheck that comes in at reliable intervals. It requires more careful planning to make sure that that advance covers you not just this year, but sets you up for the future as well. Learning to invest and be smart with your money takes time and research, and it's easy to put that off in favor of short-term goals. I encourage all the writers I work with to read up on the options out there and do their homework to figure out what makes sense for them. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing in your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. Head to acorns.com/WX or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing your future today. Client testimonial: compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/WX.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits. Go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to tell you about a novella that I translated from Icelandic. Yeah, I know, Icelandic. It's a whole other story. The thing I want to talk to you about is this novella. The author, Hildur Knutsdottir, is an award-winning writer in her home country, and we met at IceCon in 2021. I fell in love with her writing, but it wasn't available in English. The Night Guest is a creepy horror novella which starts off with a totally relatable situation. Her main character goes to the doctor because she keeps waking up tired and with mystery bruises. That's not the relatable part. The relatable part is that her concerns are dismissed because she's being, quote, hysterical. But each night, the injuries get worse. Hildur has this beautiful spare language that manages to create dread in the seemingly most innocuous moment. I loved this book enough to translate it. Check out The Night Guest by Hildur Knutsdottir.
You know, Howard, I love what you're saying about, you know, thinking about how to write efficiently, right? How to figure out how to do the least amount of rewriting. The one thing I do want to say on that, though, is I think tension is the thing that needs rewriting the most often. You know, when, as an editor, the thing that I see the most, the feedback I give the most is characters are great, world building is great, plot is great. It just doesn't have enough momentum. It needs something to, you know, the line I always say is it didn't pull me through the story in the way that it needed to, right? And so that's always a tension critique when I give that. And so what you're saying, Aaron, makes a lot of sense to me, too, in terms of like, when you do it, you have these individual scenes. It's getting the momentum and sliding from one scene to the next. And tension is how you create that elision moving from one beat to the next beat. And so figuring out how to layer that in sometimes will not be too obvious for you in the planning stages and maybe something you find as you go. So if you're struggling with that, I don't want you to like worry too much about this in the outlining and planning stages. Obviously, have an eye on it, think about it. I think it can be really helpful, but it's okay if you feel like this needs a lot of rewriting to get the kind of tension in there that you want.
I want to be clear here. When I say, you know, the least amount of work, I'm not talking about no work. There is so much rewriting that needs to be done. Yep. But I don't want to have to take this magnificent set of layers. And, instead of doing some trimming, I turn a dobosh tort into a dobosh tortilla where there's, oh, I only have one layer I can use. Now I got to rebuild the whole thing.
Yeah.
And for attention rewrite, what I prefer is to be able to say, oh, this chapter isn't working the way it needs to work. I will rewrite this chapter, rather than, oh, this chapter doesn't even fit in this book. I have to restructure it and everything that comes after it. So that's the work that I want to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the reasons I agree with everything, but I think that one of the reasons that tension often happens in the rewriting is because tension is different than conflict. And I think sometimes when we get stuck in writing, or maybe it's just me, like the instinct might be to like Michael Bay it and just be like more explosions, more things, more enemies, like, and just like build it out bigger and bigger and bigger. But that doesn't necessarily make it any more tense, because it's like, if you're up against 50 people trying to kill you or 60 people trying to kill you, I mean, it's pretty bad either way. Like, it's not more tense. You're pretty dead. So you have to think about, a lot of times it's small things that create tension. It's emotional things. It's personal things. And I think that's what I love about Ring Shout, is that the things that we talked about in tension, the girl, the sword, they're important, but they're not the big set pieces. They're not the huge battles in a lot of ways. They're these smaller moments that pull you from one big set piece to the next. And I think they can be harder to find until the rewrite, because you don't know what small detail you put in chapter 3 until you write it out. And then you go, oh, I mentioned a quilt. Maybe that's a source of tension that I can bring through.
I think the lesser version of the opening of this book is one that starts with the trap blowing up, right? But he doesn't do that. He starts with a conversation, starts with a long conversation between the key characters of this story. And I think that leads to the kind of tension that's interesting, because now we have a sense of who these people are. We're starting to care about them. And then for me, you know, the fight scene in the warehouse is fine until she draws the sword. And then it's like, oh, damn, this is interesting now, right? Because that, for me, you know, we talk about this a lot, but death isn't very interesting stakes, right? Like, if the character dies, I'm sort of like, okay, character's dead, let's move on. It's how the other characters feel about that character's death that makes it hit hard. It's the sense of like, oh, they had something to accomplish that they didn't accomplish. Because we, as people, care about other people, right? We don't necessarily care about one thing in isolation. We care about communities and relationships. So when I say that this needs stakes, I almost always mean that this needs a relationship of some sort to another person, to a group, even to like themselves in a certain way, an aspiration for themselves, that's the thing we're going to feel emotions about. So it's why starting in an action scene is something that like I always recommend against. And when you think about action scenes in general, as Aaron was saying, it's not about the explosions. It's not about the cool fight scenes. You know, it's about the intensity of emotion. It's about caring about the relationship. It's about what's the consequence of losing this fight, you know, and that consequence is in the regard of their community, in their family, whatever it is.
The community and family, there's a scene about, I want to say a third of the way into the book, where the community is coming together for shared meals. And we talk about the food, and we talk about the you know, the music and what's happening. And when a scene like that is done well, I want to eat. You know, mm-hmm. I am now connected. If you do something that like removes their ability to get crawfish anymore, I'm tense,
mm-hmm.
because food. That's important.
Yeah.
And so these sorts of celebratory moments, a third of the way into the book, granted, my meta reader is saying, oh, Howard, don't learn to love this food or these people or whatever else. P. Jelly Clark is just setting you up to care about things that could be taken away. set my meta reader aside and just enjoy it, because it's a lovely scene that connects me and allows the author to create stakes that matter, rather than, oh no, somebody's going to die. Oh no, this community might fracture.
Yeah.
And it's so grounding. Like when you said food, it made me think, you know, many of us may have been in life or death situations against multiples of people, but many have not. But we've all eaten, you know, I would assume, hopefully, at some point. And so I think that a lot of times, it makes me think about one of the challenges of fantasy and science fiction which is that sometimes you're talking about things that we have no frame of reference for. Mm-hmm. Like, I have never been tense about a ship exploding, you know, because I'm not on a spaceship, but I am tense about letting the people on my crew down. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, disappointment is something that we understand. And so I think a lot of times where I can sometimes get lost in fiction is when so much of the tension is focused on the thing that I can't ground myself into, mm-hmm. and not enough, like you're talking about, in the relationships.
Yeah.
But I think when people hear add more stakes, sometimes they think add bigger things blowing up.
One other thing I want to add to my layer cake metaphor here and sort of what we're talking about in general is I think one of the problems with adding more explosions is you lose focus, right? So I'm saying have lots of layers, but have one of those tensions be the focus of your scene, right? And then as you resolve that, you shift the focus onto something else. When you're just adding more noise, you'll lose sight of the tension. So the tension drops, actually, right? And so it's a thing to remember is that, you know, like if you think about the juke joint fight scene, right? She's running around looking for her lover through all that. And the tension is coming from that primarily. There's other elements there, right? There's the relationship with Sadie. There's whatever's going on outside with the butcher. There's, you know, again, the stuff with the sword, her memories. Those are all present in the scene. But the dominant note, going back to our music metaphor, the dominant theme in that is her relationship with this guy as she's coming to terms with how much she cares about him.
You know, you mentioned, don't raise stakes like Michael Bay by, you know, blowing more things up. Funny story, I think it's the third Transformers film where they were shooting in 3D, and it was the most enjoyable and comprehensible for me. And it turns out it's because the 3D tech people went to Michael Bay and said, that thing you keep doing with the cameras, stop it. We can't do 3D if you jiggle around a lot. Mm-hmm. And so for technical reasons, they forced him to, as you were saying, focus our attention mm-hmm. on something, which let me care about it, which made things comprehensible.
Yeah, I saw an interview with George Miller the other day where he was talking about the most important thing that he learned to do, and he learned it from making Happy Feet 2, which is the movie he made immediately before Mad Max Fury Road, which is very funny to me. But once you spot it, you can see why it makes Mad Max so good, is he learned that you communicate who the protagonist is by what the camera is looking at, right? And so all throughout Fury Road, you will notice those scenes, you talk about like Michael Bay level action, a million things are happening at once, but you're always focused on a character, what that character is experiencing, thinking, and you can tell what that character feels about the other characters in the scene, right? You can see the growing trust and affection between Max and Furiosa, simply by watching how they move, how they respond to each other. And then when they start fighting in tandem, it's this beautiful moment of two people coming together for survival. So I know we've wandered off a ring shout here, but you know, think about that focus when you're thinking about how to create and maintain tension.
Yeah, I also want to, just before we wrap up this episode, you're talking about music earlier also made me think about something that I've seen that happens a lot at karaoke, which is that if you have somebody who has the most beautiful voice in the world and they start singing at the same volume, and no matter how beautiful it is, after about 30 seconds, people will stop the thing they do where they start listening. They're like, wow, you can really sing. And they'll go back to their conversations because it is the change that actually makes people pay attention. Our human brains are really good at taking things that we're used to and screening them out. It's actually, you know, whole nother podcast on why that actually is unfortunate, because if you're happy, sometimes you can get really accustomed to it and start thinking you're not happy anymore because mm-hmm. that's what the human brain does. But it does the same thing when you're reading. And so when you were talking about the one scene and her looking for her lover, that's the note of that scene, but it's not the note of the entire book.
Absolutely.
Because if you hit the same note over and over and over again, nothing wrong with explosions. I think the reason Michael Bay gets a lot of heat is because when you go to the same well over and over, it's like that singer holding the same note, same pitch, same timbre for mm-hmm. 10 minutes. Eventually, you're just like, oh, got that. Now I need something new.
Yeah,
exactly. Speaking of something new, we have new homework for you.
Yeah, I've got your homework for you this week. What I want you to do to tie this all together is to take a look at your own outline. move one of the major conflict points in that outline into a different act. Move it forward. So say you have the resolution of Act 1, see if you can stretch that into what happens if you move that to the end of Act 2. If you have something in Act 4, what happens if you move that to Act 3? See how that changes the pacing. See that how it changes the tension. See if moving things forward or back increases or decreases the speed of reading the book and of the momentum of your story.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Have you ever wanted to ask one of the Writing Excuses hosts for very specific, very you-focused help? There's an offering on the Writing Excuses Patreon that will let you do exactly that. The private instruction tier includes everything from the lower tiers, plus a quarterly one-on-one Zoom meeting with a host of your choice. You might choose, for example, to work with me on your humorous prose, engage Dong Wan's expertise on your world building, or study with Aaron to level up your game writing. Visit patreon.com/writingexcuses for more details.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat-your-price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat-your-price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.